Episode 112 features current gymnastics strength coach and powerlifting judge out of Alabama, Coach Christina Myers. Coach Myers is on a mission to empower women and men to find their strength. She is passionate about helping athletes look and feel strong and athletic while keeping a healthy and positive mindset. She believes strongly in empowerment through education and building confidence through training. Coach Myers has earned multiple degrees and certifications to continue to grow and improve herself and her coaching. As a competitive powerlifter, Coach Myers holds 11 state records as well as competing at the national level and as a professional figure competitor. She was also a Division I track athlete and has 15 years of competitive gymnastics experience. Coach Myers and I talk about strength training for gymnastics, helping others achieve greater and more. Make sure to check out Coach Myers on Twitter, Instagram, or check out her website, www.liftheavyprincess.com. Before we jump into today's episode, just a few housekeeping things. Remember to follow the show on Twitter at HWCNPodcast. Please share this episode or any that you find value in, and we would love and appreciate a 5-star rating and review to help grow the show. If you're in the Dallas area and are looking for some fantastic custom cookies that look almost too good to eat, check out Texas Treaties. If you're in the market for some new menswear and you're trying to elevate your game, check out Etiquette Dawn. When you need a coffee that works as hard as you do or is as strong as your squat, bench, deadlift, vault, or uneven bars, or even the parallel bars routine, check out Viking Coffee Company. If you're looking for a quick and effective way to keep your weight room and or locker room sanitized, check out Zanago Sprayer. Enjoy today's episode with Coach Christina Myers. On today's episode of the Hang with Coach Noonan podcast, I'm joined by Coach Christina Myers. She is the founder of LiftHeavyPrincess.com. Coach is a personal trainer, a certified strength conditioning coach, a elite power lifter, holding 11 state records, and a multitude of other things. She's an outstanding follow on Twitter, and it's really cool to see somebody that shows the other side of gymnastics. I think it's a sport that we can all appreciate for just the amount of strength and mental fortitude it takes to put yourself out there, to be judged, and certainly by people that probably have an idea but may not even be able to execute those movements or have ever executed those movements, I feel like sometimes.
I will say gymnastics judging has some pretty cool rules, and to judge at the highest level, you actually have to have either competed at that level for a certain amount of time yourself, or have coached athletes at that level for at least a certain number of years. So you cannot judge elite gymnastics or level 10 gymnastics without having some of these, in the trenches moments yourself. So I do appreciate that. But at the lower levels, where most of the kids that we're going to be coaching are, I would say a good number of those judges either did gymnastics or coached it a little bit, but that's where you'll see more of the, like, maybe they never did it, but they learned the material and they took the test, and so they can judge.
How similar would you say that is to lower level and like kind of entry level powerlifting judging comparative to judging at an elite level where, you expect to see world records set, state records set. I don't know how much you've experienced at the high school level. I can attest to say that there are definitely some judges at the high school level that take the test and, just fill a seat. Some of it is because of the need and the lack of, but other times it's they weren't very proficient themselves, and so they kind of unjustifiably at to some degree kind of judge. And I think that's where we all start to get a head scratching of why is that okay, but somebody else's depth is not okay or whatever.
I have strong feelings on depth judging because I'll get into that later. But so I have worked with high school aged lifters, but they were competing in like the regular federations, the national federation. So it's not really the same situation. So it's kind of hard for me to speak on what the refereeing looks like at the high school level, but in like just state level and local level competition, because I've run a lot of powerlifting meets myself with USA Powerlifting, and now I've moved over to Powerlifting America. And I coach a lot of lifters that lift in USPA, which a lot of them have moved out now too, because there's just been a lot of drama in the powerlifting world the last few years. Been around a lot of different meets at the local level and the state level, and then up into like the regional and national level as well. And I would say a lot of the like state level referees, which is the bottom level in most federations, they are one of two things. I would say a third of them are like serious lifters who want to get back to the sport. Like they really are super passionate about it and learning the rules and being fair and trying to improve the sport through making better refereeing calls than what they've experienced. And then I would say another third are people who probably used to lift, but they're older now and they haven't lifted themselves in like decades. So it's very like, well, in my day kind of stuff. And some of them are good referees and some of them are just kind of like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, what are you trying to tell me? And when you're running meets and trying to improve like the speed of the meet and some of those kinds of things, as much as I love the older referees I've worked with, because they have a lot of good stories and that kind of thing, trying to get them used to like the new technology sometimes can just be like pulling teeth. Cause they're like, well, I pushed the button, and I'm like, well, everyone else's is working. I don't know. maybe you didn't really push the button. But the other one third, I don't even think a third, probably fewer than a third. There's some people that they maybe did one meet, like super recreational level, or they've never competed at all. They just think the sport looks cool and they get into reffing. And those people tend to be like the most like strict, no nonsense, but not in a good way. Like no, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is here, but it's like they can't see the bigger picture when they're reffing.
Yeah, they're like tunnel vision on the rule. Yeah. The rule. This is exactly how it's going to go, and there's like, I mean, there's a little bit of grace depending on where what meet you're at, right? Like in Texas, at the high school level, our competing season basically is January to mid-March, with mid-March being our regional and state meets. But in January, you've potentially got new referees that are getting broken in. You've got new lifters being broken in. So, you know, it's the reminder of, hey, you know, that belt's not regulation, or, hey, take the, which it, some of it is just stupid rules that are in the books, but like,
yep.
the wristband or the hair tie on the wrist, like it's not going to hinder the squat. Like, can we move on?
And it's not dangerous. It's not hurting anybody. It's not helping them in any way. Yeah.
Or the, you know, the no jewelry thing. I'm like, I mean, I get it to a degree. But I also understand it from the standpoint of like, okay, well, it's easier to say all or none than start to judge size. And so you eliminate some gray areas, but you also, it's like one more thing as the coach to remind kids that, I mean, you know as well as I do, like, I don't care how long you've coached a certain kid, you got to remind them of little things all the time. I think you experience it and you've posted about it from a gymnastics standpoint, like remembering this, remembering that. And, you know, they could have done it for 7 years and it's still one time they're going to forget. And you're like, crap, I should have.
I will tell you, in gymnastics, it's remembering your grips, because you need them for bars. You wear them every single day in practice. Like, you would think that that's like part of your main packing list for the sport. And they will, I mean, girls who are seniors in high school, will just randomly forget their grips for a meet. And like, you just can't do bars. You can't borrow them. It's really not safe. Like, you can get what's called grip block, which literally will break bones. Like, it's just really not, or you just peel off the bar anyway. So it's like, you just have to scratch that event if you forget your grips. And then on the other side of it, they will take them to meets and forget to bring them back. Like they left at home or whatever. And you're like, why did you take them out of your bag that you're bringing to practice in the first place? Like, why did they not just stay in there, come back to practice with you when you came? Because then you sit out a day of practice back at the gym. And, you know, and in season, you got to meet almost every weekend. That's like valuable time. You're not getting to train. So that's probably the most common thing. But I mean, kids forget leotards. You can't, like, what are you going to wear? It's just kind of like, what were you thinking when you, and then they try and blame their parents. And unless they're like truly like first or second graders, which I don't have any of those competing. My kids are all older. I'm like, it's not your mom's job for you. Yeah. Like, you got to have that. That's on you.
Well, I mean, we do bag checks for football, you know, before we leave the field house, and still kids will forget pants, helmets, jerseys, cleats. The gloves is like, well, that sucks for you. But I'm like, how do you forget a helmet? Like, you can't play the sport without it. How do you forget your jersey? It's supposed to have been on your shoulder pads. How do you forget your pants? It should have gone, like, I mean, and yes, we're, you know, fortunately we pack extra, but it's like that, not every helmet, you know, it's kind of special now with the way things have moved towards now. And I'm curious to see how many kids forget the, you know, $600 helmet that their parents shelled out for come game day. And they're like, whoa, I forgot my helmet. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, dude. Like, yours is designed for you. It says your name on it.
Yeah.
Enough of our soapbox. Let's dive into you as a coach, like, you know, track athlete, gymnastics competitor, powerlifting, like, some of these kind of go together, but then others, like, they seemingly are just worlds different. So how did who you are today, what was that genesis like, you know, kind of growing up and doing all these different competitions? You know, I guess somebody from a bird's eye view would say you're a competition junkie because you're involved in so much.
I'm very competitive. I'm like the kind of person that can take a simple card game and like turn it into something really big deal. And so I have to like keep myself in check if I'm playing like family games, because everyone else is like, it's for fun. And I'm like, no, I have to win.
I'm going to ask this real quick. Do y'all play Uno at the house?
Yes.
How do you play? Cause everybody has their different, you know, do you play the way that Uno says, or do you stack and like demoralize kids?
It depends on who I'm playing with. Mostly lately we've been playing the way that Uno says. Also, that reminded me, I have another favorite game, and it's really fun with kids. So if you ever are doing like game time with kids and like lots of kids can play it at once, throw burrito, if you've heard of that. It's like a combination card and like dodgeball game is the best way I can think of to describe it. It's not super complicated. It's really easy to pick up quickly, but basically like you're looking for certain things and you're like passing cards as you're going. And if you get a certain card, you put it down and there's like different commands and there's like these little foam burritos. And if you have to know which one it is, like either the person next to you is supposed to pick up a burrito, or everyone's supposed to pick up a burrito, or you pick up the burrito, and you literally like throw it at your opponents and try and tag them with this foam burrito. Like, it's a really fun game. So if you ever need one that's like for like youth athletic development, it's a good like just fun, like you have to think, you have to get up and run. It's fun. But back to me and sports. So I played a lot of sports when I was like really young. I did a lot of soccer and I played softball some. I started gymnastics in preschool. But I did all these other sports up until the point where I got to the competitive team, and eventually in gymnastics they say, sorry, you have to pick either just us or leave, or we don't want you on the competitive team. And thankfully we've gotten out of doing that as early and as strictly as we used to, like when I was younger. But that used to be like 5 or 6 years old, they were like, this is it, either you pick gymnastics or we don't want you on our competitive team, you can just do rec gymnastics. So I left a lot of those sports behind really in like super early elementary school and stuck with just gymnastics and started competing. And I did, there's a thing in gymnastics called TOPS, and it's a like super high performance, like for really young kids thing. And they take you, it used to be in Texas. I think they've moved it since then. You go to this specific testing gym and they have all these like 7, 8, 9 year old kids. And they do all this strength and flexibility testing with them. And if they like you, like if you meet the certain standards that they have, then you try out for the TOPS team and like you do a lot of gymnastics basics. And it's just a really intense thing for such young kids. So I did that when I was younger. And then I competed up until I had like a stress fracture in my back, and it kind of took me out for a while. And I was then a junior in high school, and it was kind of like, I knew I wasn't really going to have a real senior competition season. By the time like I was supposed to be out for and was allowed to come back, I wasn't going to be able to do most of what I had been able to do by the time I graduated. So I was like, well, then I think this is the end for me. So I went back to a lot of the sports that I had played when I was younger. So I went back to soccer, and my high school did not have a girls team. So I tried out for the boys team and made it. And so I played boys soccer as a junior in high school. And then I was at a small school. So one of the soccer coaches was starting a cross country team, like starting the following fall. And he said, I think you should run cross country. Like you're easily the most in shape person on this team. So I ran cross country with him. And then as we were doing like speed work for cross country, he also was one of the assistant football coaches. They all had their hands in a lot of things. When we were doing speed work for that, he was like, okay, you're actually pretty fast. And so he gets one of the other assistant football coaches to like kind of look at me. And we ran around the football field a lot because there wasn't a track at our school while we were out there doing some stuff on the field. And that assistant football coach was the head track coach. And so he said, you should definitely come try out for track. And then we're running into two sports in the same season. And so what I ended up doing most of my senior year was practicing one sport in the morning and one sport after school, which when I did gymnastics, I did 2 days where I would go do like conditioning workouts early in the morning before school. And then I would go to school and then I would go back to the gym afterwards. So like doing the 2-a-day thing was not really out of the ordinary for me. But that is how I ended up on the track team. So I ran track only my senior spring. And then I walked onto my college team, and it just, I mean, I got lucky. Like I had never thought about it. I was not planning on doing any sports in college once gymnastics fell apart for me, but I started getting recruited from some schools in spring, and I had already picked where I was going. Like I'd already signed all of my housing stuff for Sanford and all of that. So I was like, well, maybe like they'll take me. So I started trying to get a hold of the coach, and he was like, yeah, we don't have any high jumpers because there was a coaching change that year and some different stuff. He was like, so, I mean, like, I'd love to meet you and at least like see where you're at. I self-taught myself to high jump in high school because we didn't have a high jump coach. And I won state actually my very first year, 4A state, not like 6A, 7A. Like, I'm really short for a high jumper. I was tall in gymnastics. I'm like 5'5" and a half. And then I was really short for high jump. So I didn't realize I was that short until I got to college, and we would go to a lot of SEC meets. And I was just like, oh my gosh, these people are a full foot taller than me. But that is how I ended up on a college track team. And then I had never lifted before freshman year of college. I didn't do it in high school any, and gymnastics didn't do it back then. And so my first day in the weight room was like mortifying because I didn't know how to do anything. And the coach that we had when I was there, like he was not used to beginners. So I was frustrated because I couldn't figure out what the heck I was doing. And he was frustrated because he didn't know how to teach a beginner how to do all this stuff. And so like I walked in and day one, they were like, all right, you've got like hang cleans and all this. And I'm like, what, what is all this stuff? And then we would do these like ab circuits at the end every day. And I loved those because I was like the first time in the day where I was like, all right, now I finally am like not looking like an idiot. Like I'm the best one at this stuff. But that experience in the weight room my freshman year is really what kind of sent me in the direction of like wanting to change that for other people, especially knowing as I've gotten older and been in coaching and research and all of that, what the female athlete experience often is, and not getting the same kind of training as early, especially if you're not involved in certain sports, and coaches not always knowing what to do when you do get to them. If you've never trained in high school and you get to college and you have a coach who's never taught things from the beginning and that kind of thing. So that's kind of what pushed me into there. But I loved lifting so much. Once I actually finally understood what I was doing, that's how I got into powerlifting. It just was kind of a natural progression. I wanted to keep lifting. There was a sport I could do with lifting. And yeah, that's really.
Yeah. And I'm glad you touched on that, because I was going to ask you, you know, like how much of your experience, that freshman year kind of pushed you and led you into coaching and trying to change the narrative. And obviously you stated that exact deal. As you grow in your coaching and you grow, are you still trying to compete like at like an elite level, or are you just kind of more training to train to stay in some kind of shape?
I told you I had back issues in gymnastics, and so that was a stress fracture. I have scoliosis, and I have like some I don't call it a birth defect. It's from, I mean, like I was born with it, but it's not like anything that normally keeps me from doing stuff. But just kind of like finding those things. And I work really closely with a sports chiro that's amazing. And she also works with gymnastics. So it's like the perfect like collaboration for me with my athletes. And then she treats me as well. So she's all for me lifting. Like she's always been like one of my biggest supporters and powerlifting and like keeping me healthy enough to do it. But right before we all got shut down with COVID, I'd had like some things flaring up with my back. And so I had kind of like started to take a break. And then everything got shut down, and I still had gym access where I go. So that wasn't really a big deal as far as training, but that just kind of like forcing me to slow down. I've done a couple of meets since then, but I have not been as committed to trying to train at the elite level. Like there's just other things that have taken priority. So at this point, I'm really just trying to stay in shape. Like I still plan to compete, but probably not as often. Like I was truly like a qualifying meet, a warm-up meet, nationals every year for a while there. And I just like don't want to be as involved as I was then at this point in my life. I might change my mind again and come back a little bit more seriously at some point. But for the last, I would say 2 years, I've been happy to maybe compete in like one local level meet a year, train mostly for fun, like experiment with some other stuff. And it's been fun.
Yeah. How are you when you reflect on your experiences and you're able to have conversations with your athletes, whether it's, you know, powerlifters or gymnasts, and they're approaching that decision point, you know, how are you able to guide and steer them, differently than what was available to you kind of in that same position or even a little bit younger?
Which decision point?
Whether to, you know, go with a competition team or realizing like, hey, I'm not bad, but I'm probably going to need to go elsewhere. Like, let's take what I've learned here and pursue something else.
So one thing that I get to do that's really cool, where I coach gymnastics. So I am the head of all of our strength and conditioning, but I also get to be sport coach, which is really fun. And I'm the head coach with the coaching partner of a group that is designed to be, they're still competitive. They still go to meets all season long, but they are the kids who are not necessarily on like, I want to compete in college or I want to try and go elite track. And so some of them do have another sport. They either play a second sport. They're like cheerleading also. Some of them just have other interests completely. It's not even another sport. Like I have one girl who volunteers. She does like equine therapy and she volunteers there at a barn several days a week. And that takes up a good bit of her time. And that barn does like special needs therapy with horses. And so that's what she's over there helping with. And then I get to play assistant coach on two events. Two are like high level super high goal kids at the same time. So a different group on a different track. And it's really fun to kind of see where the similarities are and where the differences are. And one thing that I have tried to always instill in my kids, and being able to compare the two groups directly in the same location, makes it kind of interesting, but I want them to always work their hardest regardless of what their end goal is. And to always kind of keep their specific goal in mind and not get caught up in what everyone else is doing. And I think it's really interesting to go back and forth between that group that I am directly in charge of and this other group where I am responsible for their strength and conditioning. And I do help them out on a couple of events, but I'm not their main person. Like, I'm not a decision maker for them outside of like the conditioning stuff. And our group does better with those two things. And I would say they're also more like independent. Like, if I get called into a meeting in the middle of a conditioning rotation or a strength and conditioning session or whatever it might be happening, and I'm like not out there on the floor with them anymore, I can look, all of our office windows are glass where I am, so I can just like look straight out there and see them. They will still be working their tails off like I'm standing right there next to them. And like the other group is more likely to goof off if somebody's not right on top of them, even though they are actually the ones who are trying to get to a higher level. But because they have always been so micromanaged and like told what to do directly, they're like, when somebody's not right there telling them what to do, they don't always know how to function. And so I think that's really interesting, because later on when gymnastics is over, I think some kids are going to be better set up to succeed without the hand holding that they have like in a high level sport. So those kinds of things I try and focus on and encourage with them. And of course the gymnastics itself, because I do want them to be safe and be successful and that kind of thing. But like, I try really hard to focus on the things that are going to go with them when the sport is over.
And I think that that's an interesting insight, because, you know, I don't know how much people truly understand the demands of gymnastics, right? I think that they see the Olympic level and they understand, like, just to be an Olympian, period, takes a lot of time and effort. And, you know, obviously you've got to practice whatever events that you're going to compete in. But the micromanaging and the dictation of what it is that you're doing and how you do it, that's definitely not anything that I would have realized. And so the other thing that I'm curious about is, what does gymnastics strength and conditioning look like? You know, because they're doing so much from a body weight standpoint, and they're, you know, on the bars and they're having to hold themselves. And so, you know, obviously, I think a lot of people are aware of, like, there's a preferred size, right, for gymnasts. And, you know, there's always that wondering as to why they're always so small and so tiny. But, you know, for you as the strength conditioning coach, and also understanding the demands of the sport, which I think is hugely important for the success of your athletes, what does that look like to somebody that is potentially wanting to get into gymnastics, strength conditioning, or just simply wanting to understand how to train that type of athlete?
So there's a couple of things that you said in there that we've been battling in gymnastics for so long. So like the body type stereotypes that were very much believed, to the point that they would pick out which kids are going to make it and like only work with them at like kindergarten age, which, I mean, your body changes so much between kindergarten and high school even, and kids that look short end up being tall. And so there's just so much that like they really couldn't tell, but they were just like weeding these kids out, and they were like, I want this one, and ignoring so many other kids. And it was purely on what can this 4 and 5 year old do, which is just like insane to think about. So we've gotten past a lot of that, but I would say there's still a lot of coaches, especially coaches who have been around the longest, because that's what they came up coaching under, and it's really like what they know the best, that still kind of put too much stock into some of those kinds of things. But it's getting a lot better. Like, there's a lot more body diversity, there's a lot more people that compete up to a higher age now. Like, you see, there's your extremes. There's a lady named Oksana Chusovitna, and we call her Chuso in the gymnastics world for short. And she has competed in, like, gosh, I don't know how many Olympics, but she's been competing in gymnastics for like 40 years. When we used to think that the peak age for a gymnast was 15 or 16, and she's been competing for 40 years. And like at the world and Olympic level, like she's not just like playing around in the backyard. And she still wins medals and everything. She's amazing. And then you have the girls who do make the Olympics 15 or 16 years old, and that will be the end for them because they peak so early and their body can't really handle doing a whole lot more, or their brain can't handle doing a lot more, or whatever it may be. And we have started to see a lot more people who kind of, they maybe start entering the elite world around 16 or 17 and to kind of make a name for themselves, and they don't hit their peak where they're competing at world championships and trying to make the Olympic team and that kind of thing until they're 20, 21, 22. And several of them will go on to compete into their mid and late 20s now. So that is a new thing that we're seeing more and more of. And the normal age for your girls who are competing at the highest level elite gymnastics meets, the international competitions, the world championships, the Olympic teams, is continuing to go up. So like the average age is so much higher than it used to be. And all of those things are good because the younger gymnasts are now seeing more mature bodies competing, if that makes sense. So they used to watch other girls who were 14, 15, 5 feet tall, maybe shorter. That's all they did all day long. They don't go to school. I mean, they're homeschooled, so they technically are in school, but you know, they're training 30 something hours a week and they're comparing themselves to those girls. And so now they're seeing more adult bodies. And so as they're going through puberty, they look like the girls who are competing at the highest level. And that has changed a lot in terms of what coaches and like the athletes themselves and the parents expect out of a body type, which is great for me because I do battle a lot of the, like, I don't want to lift weights, I'm going to get too big and that kind of stuff. And usually if I can get them to like commit to it and try it, and I have myself as an example, which is really helpful. Not everyone will be able to use that. They're like, well, you lift a lot of weight and you're really small still. And I'm like, yes, because, you know, it's really not going to make you bulky. Like I've done bodybuilding and like all kinds of stuff. Like I've tried, I can't do it. Not as easily as people would make you believe it could be done, at least without any,
enhancements.
Yeah. That's the word I needed. Enhancements. So that's been really helpful. Just the way the sport is going in convincing more people to be open to lifting, because it is still, even now, as submerged into the strength and conditioning for gymnastics culture as I am, and being one of the early adopters and like really pushing it, and some of the other people that I work with in the gymnastics world that do the same, it's still kind of taboo. Like for every time somebody asks me about it and is interested and wants to figure out how to start it in their club, somebody's like, I can't believe you're doing that with them. Like, it's terrible for their sport. And I'm like, well, I mean, like, they're very successful. So I don't know what is like making you say that, but they just don't want to believe it. And that's a big part of it. But I would say as far as the differences in strength and conditioning for gymnastics versus other sports, it's not as different as you would think. The majority of what I do with them, especially from the beginning up until maybe their sophomore, junior, seniors in high school. And I usually get start with them in late elementary school or middle school, is the same. Like they need to learn the basics. They need a ton of general strength because they spend so many hours doing the super gymnastic specific stuff that the majority of what I actually do with them during our strength and conditioning time is very like general. It's the kind of stuff you would see in most weight rooms. We don't have a weight room to work with, but like it's familiar movements to most of you. Now I have a different set of equipment than what you would normally see. Like I have a lot of stall bars, those bars that kind of look like a ladder that are on the wall. I have like our regular gymnastics bars. I've got ropes, like climbing ropes and just different things that you might not have in your facility. And there is some stuff that I do that's a little more specific with those options. But I would say in general, it's pretty similar to what you would see in most other sports. And I will say I work with women's gymnastics. So the four events in women's gymnastics, you have vault, uneven bars, balance beam, floor exercise. Bars is the only one that's upper body dominant. Not that you don't need upper body strength for the other events, but like that is the one that like is truly upper body dominant. So 75% of women's gymnastics is super lower body heavy. So all kinds of things like plyometric work and just like building lower body strength and stability and that kind of thing. We have a really short sprint on vault. It's like very measured. They count their steps. They have to know exactly when they have to hurdle and do all these other things so that they don't run straight into the table. And then floor, I always like to equate floor as if you were doing some kind of race where you were going to run a mile and have intermittent sprinting in it, because it's kind of like the dance stuff is very high intensity. It's not easy. You're moving, your heart rate's going to stay up, but then you're going to get to your tumbling passes and it's like full out effort for about 5 seconds. And then you're going to kind of slow down just a little bit, you know, back into that dance stuff again, which like I said, not easy, but it is a little less intense than the actual tumbling. And then beam and bars are kind of funny because bars, upper body dominant, you're hanging by your hands, your arms the whole time. And if you think about what your metabolic system does to deal with some of the substrates that would build up in a high intensity activity, it means that you are going to take off from your feet at the very beginning of the routine. You're going to do all of this stuff on your hands and you have to land a dismount at the very end. Well, your legs and those bigger muscles in your lower body have now become kind of your buffer points. And they, when you try and land or dismount, it's like your legs are jello, even though they've done nothing this whole routine, basically. So it's just kind of things like that, that I think people don't really think about. Beam's probably the easiest event on my end. Like I don't have to do much for them to be ready for beam. Cause if they're ready for the other events, beam is like the easy one. Men's gymnastics is the opposite. So women's gymnastics, 75% lower body. Men's gymnastics is almost the exact opposite because they do have floor exercise and they have vault, but vault is so short. And the way men vault is so upper body dominant compared to women, that their sport is almost entirely upper body dominant. So they would do a completely different program. Like they would be very upper body focused, whereas I focus mainly on lower body and the upper body is kind of like the second priority of the program. Now they swing bars all day. They do all this stuff. Of course, their upper bodies are super strong compared to most other athletes. But I don't have to do as much with it because it's kind of built into the sport. So yeah. One funny difference that I just thought of today, because we're about to run stadiums this summer, is they're barefoot all the time. And then we get to this part in the summer where we do some stadium workouts just for general conditioning and general like aerobic capacity. They have to get used to wearing shoes. And it's like a learning curve that is so ridiculous to think about if you don't work with a barefoot sport, because it's like I might as well strap ankle weights to their feet and try and get them to run in them, because they're so not used to shoes that they feel so clunky and heavy on their feet. They have to like get used to them all over again for the first couple of weeks. It's really an interesting thing.
Yeah. You think about like, oh, so many of us in the industry work with either field or court sports, or even in the tactical setting, right? They're running around with boots on. You know, I way back in my youth, I competitively swam and we didn't do a whole lot of dry land exercise, but I worked with our swim team in the off season last year, and watching these kids who are completely fluid and athletic in the water just go through general warm-up movements, it looked like baby fawns. Like they were literally fish out of water. And I looked and I was like, like when you're not accustomed to it, it takes you aback because you're so used to everybody just, you know, we're walking around, we're fine, like we can do these things. And you know, it's one of those deals where if you don't get out of your comfort zone, like it's weird, right? Because they can walk the hallways fine, but then you put them in actual like A skips, or even just marching was just absolutely, I was like, oh wow, okay, let me scrap everything that I thought I was going to be able to do. And we've got to start whatever block zero is. We need like negative whatever. And to their credit, they picked it up pretty quick. They're great kids and I had a lot of fun working with them and it was a great challenge, but it was eye-opening because that's not something that I was ready for. A couple of my mentor friends kind of warned me about it. And then I went back. I was like, yeah, you are absolutely 100% right. Like, this is so different from football and soccer and baseball and basketball.
Yeah. And I would say one of the really good things about working with gymnasts is they pick stuff up so fast. I mean, the entire sport is like the most precise amounts of control over your body and the proprioception and the air awareness and just the different, the kinesthetic awareness that gymnasts have and have built since they were such tiny little humans is amazing. So anytime I do have to teach them a new movement, something like they generally pick it up extremely quickly. So that makes my job a little bit easier, I think. And anyone who gets a gymnast in another sport, whether they're doing two sports or they're done with gymnastics and they're moving on and you get them in your weight room or your athletic program, you're going to see that immediately. Like you're going to give them a correction or something to work on and they're going to have it like this. And you're just going to like, okay, well, I guess we'll move on to the next thing. So that's really fun.
We had a young lady who was very good at as a gymnast. We personally don't have a gymnastics team as part of our high school sports. It's a club deal separately. But she was also a part of a local flag football, like an elite flag football team. And so, her boyfriend at the time was powerlifting and she would kind of hang around the gym. I was like, hey, you know, just, you want to try? The biggest deal is I needed to fill a roster spot at that weight class, you know, and that's, it's always one of those weird deals. It's like, when's the last time you weighed? How much do you weigh? And they kind of give you a deal and immediately you're like, yes, I don't care if you're super strong or super weak, like you're in, right? On the girl side, on the guy side, you can be a little bit more picky, you know, but that's such a, it's a tough deal because, and we're all sensitive about that weight question, but you know, that girls, especially at the high school age, are very self-aware, you know, from either a positive standpoint where they embrace who they are, or they're very self-conscious. So anyway, she did it. She competed in two meets, because of her gymnastics and travel schedule. And she narrowly missed qualifying for regional. She was just dealing with a nagging shoulder issue that she was like, if I wouldn't have had it, I'd have been able to bench, you know, 10, 15 more pounds. I would have qualified flat out. And that's what I told him. I'm like, you know, if you just give me like two meets, you don't like understand, like there's a chance for you to be really successful. And so the hook was set and, you know, we'll try to figure out and navigate. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm bottom of the choice. I mean, this girl probably will end up getting a scholarship to go play flag football somewhere, which I think is awesome that it's growing and that's creating new avenue and opportunity for that. You know, she's just, you could tell, like just a freak athlete. And I think a lot of it just had to come, you know, from her gymnastics. Obviously I didn't really worry about grip strength because she had bars and, you know, she can, all the isometric stuff. It was so much more just about refining technique, specifically for powerlifting.
Yeah. I would say all of my, training for powerlifting, never once did I train grip strength for myself. Never needed it. Like, no. One day, maybe I'll be strong enough to deadlift more than I can actually hold, but like it was just already, you know, I had it from gymnastics and I never had to try and train that separately. Never had any of the grip issues that a lot of lifters have to deal with.
Yeah. Let's transition over the genesis of your website and your brand, Lift Heavy Princess. How did that come about?
So it started, let's see, there is a song that's old and it's called Punk Rock Princess. And that was one of my favorite songs, like in high school growing up. And I combined like that and some of my powerlifting stuff. And it was just, I like named a blog I wrote or something, just that, And it was never intended to be the title of the business. And then it was before I actually had kind of like really started my business. I just started a blog is what I was doing. I was still like personal training in a commercial gym at that time, kind of trying to figure out where I was going and like about to start getting my master's. And I started coaching gymnastics, by the way, like I was taking my final exams my senior year of college, and it was intended to be a summer job because I was starting grad school and I loved it so much that I just never left. So I've always done that. And then I was personal training on top of that at one point and eventually moved into strength and conditioning coaching from there. But that was just a blog I started because I was in a commercial gym with all these non-competes and like I couldn't do any kind of other coaching or anything. And then when I finally moved on from that position, I was like, what should I name this business? And it was boyfriend at the time, but now my husband was like, well, why don't you do this? Because like everybody picked that up. Like it turned into a hashtag with people that like knew me locally at least. And so that's just kind of, it was a play on those song lyrics and it turned into a business name. So, yeah. And a brand.
Well, and I think it's pretty cool. I haven't seen someone else with something like that. So it obviously sets you off unique. You offer a lot of variety in terms of services. How do you manage the demands that you have with the gym and coaching gymnastics? You're at the time when you were really training competitively, but then also what all you offer through the website, like, because you can easily fall into a trap of cookie cutter, kind of like a lot of these other, you know, one-off influencers do that phase out, because they don't ever have understanding of diversity and such. And obviously certain things are going to transfer over regardless of who's asking, but you know, you definitely want to create a little bit of individualization for that client.
So one thing that I think is really important, if you're going to coach online at all, you have to have coached in person. Like that's something I believe in just so wholeheartedly. I never even meant to be a personal trainer. It's kind of a funny story. I graduated college in May and I started a PhD program that I eventually didn't like and left in August. So like I said, I got a summer job coaching gymnastics. And it wasn't until I knew I was leaving my PhD program, but like, obviously I didn't have a PhD yet because I was choosing to like go a different route, that I was like, what the heck can I do that like I'm qualified for until I figure out what I'm doing next. And so that is how I got into personal training in the first place. And I always knew that I really wanted to work with athletes, and that's kind of what I wanted to do with grad school and that kind of thing. And I, at the end of undergrad, still thought I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. Like I wanted to be like a team doctor. That's how I wanted to help athletes. And then I actually got into shadowing some surgeons and realized how little time they actually spend with patients and how much of it is paperwork and like the kind of stuff that I just had no desire to actually do. I was kind of like, this isn't my route. This isn't how I still want to work in sports. I want to help teams, but like, this isn't how I want to do it. And so that kind of led me to want to be on the preventative side of things. And I found kind of like, I was like, strength and conditioning really seems like my window. Like I want to help reduce injuries and do some of the other things through that. And so that is kind of how I was like, well, I'm qualified to be a personal trainer. I'd been working in a lot of exercise science labs while I was in grad school. And so I just got a job at a Gold's that was like down the street, got certified through ACSM pretty easily because I was right out of school for it, and started doing that. And I worked with a lot of gen pop there and I never liked it. Not that I didn't like my clients or like I met lots of wonderful people, but like it just wasn't very fulfilling for me. Like even the really big success stories, like I remember this one guy that I worked with that he was type 2 diabetic. He was on all this medication when I started working with him. I set him up with this program and eventually turned him loose. Like it was always my goal, which made me a terrible commercial gym trainer, to like set these people loose on their own, because I had taught them what they needed to know to like be successful. And that's what I did with this guy. I worked with him for a while, set him up with like, you need exactly this. Your cardio needs to be spaced out like this for the sake of your insulin sensitivity. Here's your strength training. And like, he eventually took over his programming stuff on his own once I kind of showed him what I needed to do. But like he lost, gosh, 150 pounds, got off most of his medicine, like he looked like a completely different person by the end of it. And like, that was good. Like, I was happy for him, but like, I don't know. I was just kind of like, oh, well, cool. Glad that worked out. It never like, you know, I just always could tell it wasn't really like the end goal for me. So even now, when I take on like Gen Pop clients and they are not necessarily going to compete in anything, like I take on what I like to call athletically minded clients. And that is people who are like truly committed to whatever it is they're doing. They have goals that are like tangible, like whether it's I want to be able to do 5 pull-ups or it's I want to squat 300 pounds, I want to compete in powerlifting, that kind of thing. Like there's specific goals that they have in mind before they get to me. And as I am reading through client inquiries and people like requesting my services, those are the kind of things I look for. And I turn people down that aren't the right fit for me. And I think that's an important thing because one, you have to like coaching what you're coaching. Like the strength and conditioning style, even if it is toned down more for like a gym population client, needs to be the right fit for that person. And it's not for everybody. I mean, like how many gym pop people, if you told them to like barbell squat, are going to be like, absolutely not. Or like, they just want like cardio and like to be toned. And those are not my clients. And I know that. And so as I've gained experience over the years, if I get people that are requesting that kind of stuff, and I will talk to them, you know, and kind of make sure that they're not just using the wrong words, because sometimes people just don't know the language. It doesn't mean that they're not goal oriented. I'll turn them down and I try and have a network of other people I can refer them to. Not just be like, yeah, I'm not working with you. Like, hey, I think this person's a better fit for you. Why don't you try them instead? And so that helps a lot because obviously I'm not just taking on any client. So the clients I do take on, we're a good fit. We're happy together. Like what my style of coaching and what they're looking for are going to go well together. And so they're going to have more success and feel more satisfied and we're going to communicate better. So I think that's a big part of it. It kind of avoids a lot of the issues you would normally run into with online coaching. I do have, gosh, like 12 years of in-person like coaching experience now and personal training and that kind of stuff. So it's really easy for me to look at videos to do those kinds of things and help them out and like have the kind of cues that are going to help them and not just be like watching a video and be like, looks good or like go lower or whatever. Like I can actually like tell them how to get there and coach them through it because I am used to coaching people in person. And then I think another big part of it is you need good systems and not cookie cutter programs. Like you need good systems for you as the coach to be able to efficiently get programs out. I started with Excel spreadsheets and like a Google Drive. Now I have like an actual coaching software and app that I can work through. And it's wonderful. And if anybody's ever like needs recommendations, I'm happy to show you what I use. But to have those kind of systems in place where your programming process, while it's not cookie cutter and it's still individualized, is very streamlined. Like you can put those programs together quickly and you're not wasting a lot of extra time trying to figure out what you're doing or like how you're going to present it or where you're going to put it. And it's easy for the client to get to and understand as well. And another big part of it is you have to figure out how many athletes or clients can you take on and serve well. Like what is your capacity? So with me having all of the gymnastic stuff on the side, now my online coaching is really more part-time for me. And so I have to go, okay, I can have this many clients of this variety. And if I have somebody who's competing more often, like they take a little bit more time, they take travel time if I'm going to go coach them at meets and that kind of stuff, then like I can't have as many of those. And so I have to kind of figure out what that mix is for myself and what my time is and my like capacity, if you will, because like in season for gymnastics, I'm obviously gone a lot more. Like there's a lot more travel time, that kind of stuff. I don't take on new clients during that time of the year, hardly ever, because it's just not a good time for me to try and start a new client with the amount of work that goes into new clients versus clients who are just kind of coasting, who their programs are already set up and like they know what they're doing and they're not new to you. Like you guys are used to each other. And then as far as my own training goes into that, when I'm doing kind of like I'm doing now where I'm training mostly just stay in shape, have fun, try some new things, it's not terrible because it's very flexible. When I was training seriously for powerlifting though, and the workouts were a little bit longer and a little bit more intense, that took a lot more planning and time management. And I would have, and it took more of my mental capacity to do. And so that's a time where I would have had to go, okay, I can't have as many clients right now. Like, I don't need to be trying to get new clients because like, this is really me at my max capacity. And that's a conversation I think you have to have with yourself and just really honestly figure out what you can handle and what makes sense. Because if you're not serving your clients well, or if you're staying up until midnight trying to get client programs done and like not getting any sleep, like you're not really serving yourself or the clients to the best that you can. That's important to keep in mind.
That's really great advice, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people that wonder about the private sector and online coaching and think, oh yeah, I can just, you know, I can just waltz right in and do it. And you don't realize the time commitments and in order to qualitatively serve, that's even a word, but, you know, to put out a quality product, to have, you know, either retaining customers or bringing on, you know, new clients, you know, because the flip side is, if you don't like somebody online, you can hop around. You know, there's a lot of people to choose from. Not everybody's good, and not everybody is really qualified to do what they think that they're trying to do. But unfortunately, you know, the Gen Pop doesn't necessarily pay attention to that. They just see likes and follows and whatever. I think, you know, with your selection of that more athletic, goal-oriented person, they're going to look for certain characteristics of a coach because they want to make sure that they can get to those goals. You know, because I think at the end of the day, a lot of people really truly want that accountability. It's just, how do you go about getting it and such. So I know we're coming to the end of time, but did you want to get on the soapbox about squat depth? I know we teased it at the beginning of the episode. As an actual powerlifting judge, you know, I'm sure you have plenty to speak on regarding that.
So, and as a competitor too, because I have a really short torso and like really long femurs. And so, and I'm also a small person. Like I am 5'5" and a half, but I've always competed at 125. And that's not a hard weight class for me to get into. Half the time I didn't have to cut, or maybe at the most I did like a 1 pound, 2 pound water cut to get into that. That's just like a close weight to what I walk around at. I tried moving up a weight class. I couldn't fill it out. I came back down, just some different things. But because of that, and because my legs are long, even though I've got decent muscle, it's a very straight line. I don't have like a curve like a lot of people are going to have with that muscle mass and like a shorter femur and making their hip crease more obvious. So I would get called on squat depth that was actually lower than what other people could get away with if they had like curvier thighs and quads. And that used to always drive me insane. So as a ref, that was like something that I was like really like trying to make sure I was being super fair about and not the optical illusion that one person might be lower than the other. The very first time I attempted a 300 or 303 pound squat on the platform, that was a really big milestone for me being able to squat 300 officially, because I'd like hit 297 and like just hadn't actually broken the 303 mark. I got called, and my hips, I told you earlier, I have scoliosis, so my hips are not perfectly even. So it's very normal for me on squats to get like a 2-to-1 white, 2 white lights and 1 red light. So the lift is good, but like one judge thought one side was high. And I got called on depth from the front. And so I got 2 reds and 1 white. And because I got called from the front, it didn't count officially. I count it because I think it was low enough. But officially, I never actually got that lift in competition. And so that has always been frustrating to me because you cannot call depth from the front.
Yeah, I was going to say.
If it's close, you can't do it. So I don't know what they were doing, but it's going to bug me forever.
Yeah, because to me, you know, the head judge for the squat is more about looking at, you know, do elbows contact the thigh? Are the feet moving? It's a lot more mechanical things of issue than, you know, because the other deal is when I coach depth and when I have my kids coach depth, We're always looking from an off angle on the side. I can't coach your depth from behind you. My job is to spot you. I'm not going to coach it from in front of you, because that's really it's kind of awkward, because I'm talking to you and I don't want you to look at me, because I need you to focus, but you're going to look at me because you're a squirrel. Like, yeah. So, well, I'm with you. Like, there's just certain lifts that, you know, in your brain, you're like, I got that, you know, regardless of what it says. And I know that, you know, there's going to be sticklers and say, well, it doesn't count because it wasn't here. It, you know, gym PRs or whatever don't count. I'm like,
And for me, that was the national platform. I was at nationals. It was my first over 300 squat in a meet. It wasn't my first one to ever attempt. I had tried it a few times and completely failed at the bottom. So it was the first one I ever stood up with in a meet. And so for it to be called on something so weird like that. And I'm a person, as a lifter and as a coach, I am a stickler for technique and efficiency, especially in powerlifting, because that's something I work really hard on with my athletes. It's something I worked really hard on for myself. So to have spent all that time, I've never in all of the years of powerlifting gotten a red light for a technique thing. I've never double bounced a bench. I've never hitched a deadlift. I've never had stuff like that. So to miss a squat on that of all things, I was just I'm counting this one.
I love it. Last thing I want to get you out with, I think I would be doing a disservice if I didn't allow you to kind of just speak on it, but just changing the narrative, because we talked about it early in the beginning and we talked about it more specifically with gymnastics, but just female strength training in general, right? And the need to improve the quality, the need to create more opportunity for it. If you just take a moment and just kind of talk your feelings on that, and just, you know, what you would encourage young, really just all females in general for strength training, but particularly the young female, you know, elementary, middle, high school age, because obviously once they get to college, they're going to probably continue that once they've started it, but. You know, just however you feel about that.
I would say, and some of this is a little bit hard when you're young because you only have so much control over what you do and don't do. A lot of it's up to your parents, but start as soon as you can. I think that is one of the biggest differences and we overlook it a lot when we talk about females versus males and whatever, with their strength levels and different things, is that girls don't start training as young most of the time. And it's gotten better over the years. It's obviously very different than when I was in high school and middle school, but it's still, they don't start as young. The stigma is still different. You have little boys from a young age being encouraged to do these athletic things and to lift weights and to get into working out with their dad and that kind of stuff. And a lot of girls don't have that. Even if their mom does like to work out, the chances of it being specifically strength training in a gym setting are very low. It's women, just a lot of them are going to pick a different workout method, and not that it's bad or wrong or anything like that, but it isn't strength training in what we think of for sports a lot of the time. And so even at the same biological age, the training age is usually so different still for women versus men and for girls versus boys. And I think we forget to take that into account when we're like, well, my boys can do this many pull-ups and my girls can only do one, or they can't do any or whatever. I'm like, okay, but how long have they been doing pull-ups for? Were they doing them on a pull-up bar at 5 years old and dad was encouraging them and working with them and that kind of stuff? Or did they literally just start when they got to you 3 months ago, 6 months ago, that kind of thing? And so a lot of times when we compare strength levels of any exercise, we don't take those things into account, how much of a different training age we really are at with our women. And that obviously is not something that you ever overcome. I mean, you started later for the rest of your life. So when we look at things like ACL injuries, we have new data and research coming out that it has a lot less to do with the Q angle and the hormones than we originally thought, and has a lot more to do with just training age and that kind of stuff, and the quality of training that women athletes receive over the course of their careers compared to their male counterparts. And that's one of those things that, like, I wish I could say it surprised me, but it doesn't, because as a female athlete who started young, who didn't lift weights until I got to college and kind of went through that firsthand, like, I know how different it was. I know how many times somebody said, you don't really want to do that, you're going to be too bulky. How in my bodybuilding career, even though I am still a very tiny human, like, even like my own mom was like, well, I don't want you to get bulky. And I'm like, Mom, it's been 5 years. Like, it hasn't. What makes you think it's gonna, I'm just gonna magically sprout these giant muscles tomorrow, and that kind of thing. So I think as we have moved forward, and social media is a wonderful tool, and there's so many more female athletes, and you get to see what their life really looks like and their training and that kind of stuff, but also you still have your really young female athletes comparing themselves to fitness influencers, and not to the actual athletes. And I think even for professional female athletes, you still have a lot of pressure to look a certain way, especially if you have any kind of social media following or you're doing any kind of brand deals or anything like that, that even those ladies are still paying attention to how they come off on camera and not necessarily their performance to the same degree that a male athlete gets to. And I say gets to because when you look at even just like media, for athletes in the same sport, like if you look at like the NBA versus the WNBA and you look at the different pictures they take of them and the things that they highlight of these different athletes, like the pictures aren't even the same. They get the guys and like their moments of glory and like intensity, and you get, I mean, you can all think of like Serena Williams or some of the other famous athletes that have been emotional just once, and it's like this big huge thing, it becomes a national controversy, everyone has things to say on it, but like how many times have you seen a male athlete get upset and everybody's just like, yeah, well, he's passionate, what's good. So I think there's a lot of things like that that are still a double standard, and I hope that as we move forward we can continue to push those narratives to a more equal place. But I would say one of the biggest things is to keep in mind when you're working with women or female athletes of any age, they haven't been training as long. And to kind of back up a few steps with what your expectations are, like, let's say you have high school girls who are joining the weight room for the first time, they've never lifted. Well, don't treat them like your ninth grade boys who've been lifting since sixth grade. You've got to back up to the beginning. And I will tell you that working with girls and women athletes, you will have a lot of success if you like take your time and you show them that you respect them and that you value them being there, because they work really hard. The attention to detail is almost always there. Like, they want to please you. So if you form good relationships with them, they're going to be your hardest workers pretty much always. And the main thing that you're ever really going to have to encourage from them on a work ethic level, and it's really not even work ethic, I would say it's more self-confidence, is adding more weight to the bar. Because they're gonna underestimate their ability, and I think that's your biggest asset as a strength coach, is to be able to kind of objectively show them what they're really capable of, and watch how that pays off in their confidence in a way that you don't usually have to do with your male athletes, because they're more likely to put too much weight on the bar than the other way around. I think if you can kind of remember those things, and like let those be your strengths as a coach, then you'll get a long way with them and really serve them well, like long term.
Love it. Absolutely. 100% agree with you. So, Coach, thank you for taking the time, and appreciate all that you post about, and just the insight that you provide, and just being a resource for people to come to know more about gymnastics and, you know, the ins and outs of that, as well as, you know, your experiences with powerlifting. And I wish you all the best.
Thanks.